The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
To alleviate trolley numbers and pinch points in our hospital emergency departments, 50 new consultant appointments are to be fast-tracked. Is this the silver bullet or a smaller step towards a more efficient health system? Well, to get some insight, I'm joined now by columnist with the Irish Medical Times, Dr. Chris Luke, himself a hugely experienced ED consultant. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, I was thinking there is a shortage of consultants right across the board in the Irish Health Service, and one of the reasons is a reluctance on the part of qualified people to apply for these posts. Where's the guarantee that announcing 50 posts will result in 50 jobs?
Well, you've put your finger on the nail there, Pat. I mean, that's the most basic problem. We have something like 800 vacancies for consultants in the Irish Health Service across the state. And as you suggested, the reason for the vacancies is largely because the trainees that are scattered around the world in the medical diaspora are reluctant to take up these posts. First of all, because they perceive what's seen as a two-tier consultant contract system, whereby the consultants who are appointed at the moment are paid less for doing the same amount of work as consultants who have been in the system for longer. So that's a basic hurdle that they have to get over. And of course, the other thing is that the terms and conditions otherwise are seen to be very, very difficult by trainees who are working in departments in the UK and Canada and Australia, where they may have 25 to 30 consultants just in one medium-sized department. So that's the sort of gap that you're talking about bridging.
How many consultants would we have in a major ED in Dublin or Cork? I mean, what would be the typical personnel available? And, you know, is there always one on or two on?
Well, as you know, I've worked in Cork for most of the past 20 years, and from the day I arrived in 1999, a consultant in emergency medicine was in the department every single day. Now, basically, because there were just two of us spinning around three departments across the city, and of course looking after the other hospitals in the county, it meant that we couldn't be in the three departments at the same time 24/7. It meant we had to divide our time up, but you know, we were there every single day at some stage to keep an eye on the place. Now there are 14 consultants who are, again, doing the same thing. They're keeping an eye on three departments. There are two departments that are emergency departments and one that's a minor injury unit, plus Mallow and Bantry in terms of governance. But, you know, even in 1999, when I left the UK, there were departments in Manchester and Edinburgh and London that had 10 consultants. That's 20 years ago. So departments, as I say, in the UK, many of them have 20. In Ireland, I think that the most generously staffed departments, place in Dublin, the big teaching hospitals in Dublin and Cork, have, you know, between 6 and 10 consultants. And that means that there are consultants on the shop floor from very early in the morning, you know, 6 or 7 in the morning, till late at night. And they're always available, of course, on call. So they'll tend to come in for the big cases like the polytrauma. So what it basically means is that you can have, if you have 6 to 10 consultants in a major department, it means that you've got several consultant decision makers on the shop floor for the vast majority of the day. And remember that, of course, most patients arrive in our emergency departments between about 7 a.m. And midnight.
Now, what do they do in the sense that there are other doctors who are in the EDs and the emergency department consultant is, if you like, more qualified, more experienced? So when any of us fetch up in an ED, who are we likely to see first?
Well, the first person that you normally will see is a triage nurse. And a triage nurse is a highly experienced staff grade nurse in the triage room. Triage comes from the French to sort the wheat from the chaff. It's an old military medical term which originated with Napoleon's famous medic, Baron Larry. In a nutshell, we've tried over the past 2 or 3 decades to try and ensure that people who have greater priority are seen first. In other words, you may be quietly whimpering in the corner there as you have your heart attack, while somebody else who's young, fit and healthy is shouting because they've had a few drinks. And, you know, we're all conscious of that, that often it's the most polite people, the most well-behaved in the waiting room that get wait the longest in the olden days. But now you come in and you'll be seen systematically in the triage area, and your metrics, your vital signs, your your blood pressure, your heart rate, your temperature, your oxygen levels, your sugar levels will all be measured. Your story will be taken, and that will be then judged against perhaps a referral letter from your GP to put a composite picture together. And you'll then be assigned a triage code, you know, 1, 2 to 5. You know, 1 is immediately, obviously, you should be, you know, you may be having a cardiac arrest or, you know, a cop death or really critically injured. And then the next level is would be seen within the half hour by senior staff. And basically, the triage nurse will light the touch paper for every patient's stay. And if you need to be seen immediately, a team tends to be called, led by either the most senior of the registrars or the consultant, ideally the consultant. And of course, if you have several consultants in the department at that time, you will have a team led by a consultant. But, you know, the first thing that the consultant brings is experience. By and large, they've seen 10 years worth of patients as a qualified medic. Plus, they've often specialised in an area like the difficult airway, putting people asleep, doing ultrasound examination. Ultrasound is now become almost de rigueur in emergency departments, and it means that people can have a quick scan of their heart, quick scan of their lung, quick scan of their blood vessels, which enables people to put lines in, to put airway tubes in, to see if there's fluid in the heart. All sorts of things can be done. In other words, the emergency physician is now doing things that were only done by a radiologist, say, 20 years ago, and so on and so on. So in other words, many of the consultant emergency physicians are dual qualified. They're bringing something else to the party as well as their experience. Mm.
But does that mean, though, that if someone comes in who's got radiology or anaesthesia as their specialty, you could be lucky that you happen to have the ailment that matches their expertise? And then again, you might be unlucky that the consultant doesn't have the expertise that you require at that moment.
Well, what happens with consultants is that, I'm a great believer in the individual leading. In other words, I remember back working in the NHS, and Tony Blair said he wanted everywhere to be like Papworth, the famous, you know, heart transplant hospital. But Papworth, the famous heart transplant hospital in the UK, was famous because it had one, I can't remember his name, but one particularly famous transplant surgeon who led the way. And what happens with consultants now is that they come into the department, and over time they drive up the quality of care. And for example, if there's a tradition of calling an anaesthetists, you know, for every single case, that may be quietly dropped as staff are trained up to do their own anaesthesia for basic things, or for cardiac arrest, where you need to put a tube in, or where you put somebody asleep immediately rather than waiting perhaps 20-30 minutes for somebody to come down from the theatre. So the skills that they bring are disseminated over time. So that basically means that now almost all trainees, I mean every trainee now in emergency medicine, can use the ultrasound, the magic wand, to look at all sorts of issues initially before sending them to the radiology department. Similarly with airway care, they have a very advanced level of airway care, you know, that's on a par with for example a junior anaesthetist.
This is very welcome news that there will be 50 more ED consultants spread around the country. It won't bring us up to the levels they enjoy in Britain and in Australia and all the rest of it, but it will improve things. But the fundamental question is, will it process people any quicker? Will it mean less trolleys, fewer trolleys? Will it mean a more efficient ED? I mean, is the emergency consultant also a manager of, you know, the flow through that department to make it more efficient?
Well, I mean, the consultant, the emergency physician, the consultant in emergency medicine has to do all sorts of things in her or his role. And that ranges from immediate hands-on patient care right through to advocacy with management and the HSE for more kit, you know, because very often, for example, it takes months to get the basics of a consultant's requirements when he or she arrives. And, you know, we're talking about an office and a secretary and a computer, for example. That can take months, in my experience, very often. So advocacy, training, they have to train the medical students, the nurses, the trainee emergency physicians. They may have to do audit. They may have to do risk management. And, of course, there are only about 1%, Pat, of the patients who are seen in a big emergency department are actually critically ill or injured. In other words, the cardiac arrests and the cot deaths and the polytrauma. The rest are divided into those who are, for example, the elderly, who are about a third to a quarter, who are on trolleys with pneumonia or shingles or a stroke. And then the other two-thirds are what are called the walking wounded or the ambulatory care. They're people who walk in.
Do they really have too much of a place in EDs? Someone who's got what looks like a suspected broken leg or a broken upper arm or whatever it might be, do they properly belong there, or should they be told, look, you're not going to be seen until 9 o'clock in the morning anyway because we've so many other people. Why don't you go home and come back to us?
Well, Pat, I've been a fan of that for many, many years. We call it deferred care. And I mean, in my dreams, and you know, we did get some of this going in Cork. If you had an incident on the beach in Yall or Barley Cove today on your family holiday, and you had an injury of your wrist or your whatever, in the ideal circumstances, you could ring ahead to CUH or to Corona Brogha or to the Mercy, and get an appointment with the advanced nurse practitioner, who are immensely skilled in injury care and who look after a whole slice of the pie, as it were, of patients coming through. So that's very much scheduled care. And another thing, of course, that's happening, Pat, as you're probably aware, for example, in places like Vincent's, is that a team led by a senior registrar or consultant in emergency medicine will go from Vincent's out to the homes of the elderly. For example, so an elderly party who's had a fall or banged their shin and is bleeding heavily from a shin wound, and they will assess the patient in their own home. And 8 or 9 times out of 10, they can avoid an admission or a transfer to the local emergency department, and that's called care in the homes. That's another thing. And the more consultants you have, the more of this sort of innovation and training occurs. And that's, again, so ultimately, when you get consultants, you get quality, you get innovation, you get development, now, and you get expansion.
The question is, how quickly can these be recruited? I'll read you some of the comments. Doctors are not coming back here to take up consultant posts because the pay is completely inadequate compared to elsewhere, especially with our current tax regime. And after 20 years of study and 80 hours per week working, they are dead right. That's according to Jill. And I always think that when we compare gross salaries, it's not really appropriate. You've got to figure out what people take home in their pay packets and also what the local cost of living is to work out whether or not you'd be better off coming home or otherwise. With all due respect, 50 consultants won't save the health service. It's like a plaster over a bullet hole. The A&E issue is about more than consultants. We can't encourage consultants or other doctors to work here at all in any departments. All these consultants who are never available to consult. A triage should be done by a senior medic, an SHO at least. What's the point in hiring consultants if there are no beds? Loads of doctors, but no place for patients. Is the reality not that the consultant pay in the UK is quite a bit lower than in Ireland? Do consultants want higher pay doing public and private work, or a better work-life balance? A number of issues articulated there by our listeners. And I'm wondering, there's probably private ED work for consultants in the private hospitals who, you know, the Mater and the Blackrock Clinic and so on, doing this kind of emergency service, which is not 24/7, it has to be said. So maybe there are other job opportunities. In the past, you would have thought, you know, you can't do any private work as an ED consultant.
Well, Pat, I actually had the opportunity to work in one of the private emergency departments in Dublin when a close colleague and friend basically died suddenly, and they needed someone to keep an eye on the department. So I had the opportunity to see the differences between the emergency department and in the private and public sector. And the one thing which shocked me was that while they had phenomenal facilities and they had extraordinarily speedy access to any kind of scan and so forth, they didn't have more beds. So the situation was just as bad, in my experience, in terms of getting people into bed. So what the difference was, simply this: you could be in it, come in when the doors opened at 10 o'clock, and you could have your very substantial diagnosis made by 11, let's say, because you had fancy scans and blood tests. But you could wait for hours and hours and hours in the private department because there was just simply no beds. And at the end of the shift, they might ask you to transfer the patient from the private sector to the public sector, which is another consideration. And I think there's very few consultants in emergency medicine who would work full-time singly. I mean, from my experience, it's very, very few, because there's sort of a critical mass of skill and patients that you want to maintain, patient experience and, you know, range of activities. And private medicine, I mean, I use the word cherry picking because that's what the economists say and that's what the unions say. In other words, they tend to get patients that are easier to sort or that are more circumspect or circumscribed. You know, it's more obvious what's going on with them and they're much less complicated. Emergencies, real emergencies by definition, are very messy. They often require layer upon layer of different specialists. You tend to only to have that number of specialists in the big public teaching hospitals. So basically, I hear all those critiques, and they're all absolutely valid. But I think here's the thing which it was brought home to me, literally, I mean, pardon the pun, during COVID, we saw just how many Irish medics and nurses were desperate to get home to their loved ones during COVID when they couldn't leave Australia. So I think people underestimate the call of home when it comes to people returning to work in the health service. And I think that remains a major gravitational pull. You know, doctors and nurses, I must emphasize, nurses as well need to be far better treated by our system than they already are. And I think that the main pathology in our health service lies in the realm of human resources and the management of human beings. And I've seen it in reports after report, for example, in the NHS, they consistently say that the main issue is a want of emotional intelligence. In other words, putting yourself, the management, into the shoes of the staff nurse, the student doctor, whatever.
All right, Chris. Thank you very much for your insights. Dr. Chris Luke, columnist with the Irish Medical Times and also a hugely experienced ED consultant. A friend of mine who's a consultant sent me a photograph, by the way, a very interesting photograph. I might put it up on our various social media platforms. 300 Irish doctors on the beach in Perth last Christmas Day. Gives you an idea of the scale of the talent drain out of this country. 300 of them all together posing for a big picture on Christmas Day in Perth.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.